I was 15 and my dad gave me this old top gun and he was in the Navy. And ever since then, I've been hooked.
You shoot.
What you know about right? I gather up each sound you left behind and stretch them on our bed. Each night I breathe you and become high.
Ho ho! Check you out, girl. That's yours?
Nah, Sanchez. I'm a lifelong fan. Mm. She makes me want to burn my notebook.
Oh, nah. See, it's about reaching your level, not hers.
I thought it was about the definitive work.
Yeah, well, Mozart was the exception. Like Bird.
You have all the answers, don't you?
Mm-mm. It's all a question.
You're cocky. It's cute.
Ah, cute. check it out. Do you like reggae music?
Yeah.
Let's go to the Wild Hair. I want to see the little Yonky girl dancing tonight.
You want to drive all the way up to the North Side tonight?
Tonight, man. You want to feel a little bump and grind.
What if it starts raining again?
Oh, now don't tell me that. You're afraid of getting a little wet tonight.
Break!
Is Break with yours truly, Casey Layman. As usual, we have a beautiful roundtable in the house tonight. Tonight's guests are Black Is team members Chris Layman, Toria Williams, and John Wood, and special guest Delicia Smith. And tonight's topic is from 1992 until now, the most influential Black films, our top five most influential Black films. So, okay, I'm going to run my list off really quick of, for me, the top five most influential Black films in the last 20 years. Boomerang, Love Jones, Malcolm X, Diary of a Mad Black Woman, Devil in a Blue Dress, and an honorable mention to The Best Man. I feel like Boomerang and Love Jones are self-explanatory. I shouldn't have to explain why those movies were just so phenomenal and great. But I will if I have to. And the same thing with Malcolm X. I put Diary of a Mad Black Woman because that was our introduction to Tyler Perry on the big screen. And he has had a major career boom ever since then. And so his influence, whether you support him or not, is without question in regards to our presence on the big screen and Black people depicted in film, period. And then Devil in the Blue Dress, I think that movie was so slept on, but so amazing. Almost 100% Black cast. It definitely had white characters, but majority Black cast. We're talking Denzel Washington and my boo, Don Cheadle. Sorry, honey. That's my side boo right there. and the fact that this was a story that was adapted from a Black writer, a Black mystery writer, Walter Mosley, that movie for some reason really spoke to me. And I think it's because it was based in early Los Angeles. And so the scenery was familiar. Everything about it just kind of struck a nerve with me, I think, as an Angeleno. And it was just such a good story. And if you read the book and then saw the film, it was a very close adaptation. And I gave the honorable mention to The Best Man because I've always enjoyed that film. I thought it was great, you know, young, successful Black people talking about college, talking about marriage, talking about relationship drama. And I think it kind of also ushered in a series of Black dramatic love stories. Nothing touches on Love Jones when it comes to Black love stories, in my opinion, in regards to the last 20 years of Black film. But I think The Best Man kind of created a prototype for movies that came after it, like Two Can Play That Game and movies of that type. Even Think Like a Man, for what it's worth.
This is Chris. I will say to your list, I have most of those. I don't actually have a five because they're hard. Malcolm X goes unspoken. I mean, that was just an awesome film. I mean, Black people still to this day argue that movie should have won basically best director, best picture, best actor.
Without question. It should have swept the Academy Awards. I think that year made it so blatantly obvious how racist Hollywood is and how manipulative they are in their choices because it was an epic piece of work.
Yeah. I think Love Jones was pretty much the last great love story. That was like, sound like original and was like, wow, this is actually a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great date movie. Boomerang is just hilarious. I mean, I can recite that whole movie from front to end watching it.
Yeah.
Something. One that I have that was, and it was really slept on, and it was very powerful, was Get on the Bus.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember my dad taking me to see it. We went to see it, and he was just, it was funny. It came out, I remember it came out right around the time that Booty Call was out. And the big thing that my dad and I argued about Get on the Bus, it was like, it had like no marketing whatsoever. Like, people didn't know about it. I was in college during the Get on the Bus when everybody went to the Million Man March. I didn't go personally, but I mean, to see that movie, it was like, wow, this is really deep. Yeah. And I don't have a fifth one, but I think what you have on there is pretty, I would say pretty influential.
Thank you for reminding us about Get on the Bus. I want to play the drums now. Right. Like, start rapping.
That's Tori, a clown.
Shabuya.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah,
I would have to put that on my list. I didn't. I forgot about that. I had Higher Learning, and I think it just really made us conscious and made us think, and it allowed us to say, yeah, there's discrimination and racism going on, you know, and feel okay with voicing that. You know, I think we think about Ice Cube. I think that was for many people their first introduction of the intellectual Ice Cube, because he wasn't just acting.
Right.
Clearly, he wasn't
right.
just acting. For me, Set It Off. It was empowering. It was the first time we saw women take on the role that is usually given to men, and to see those four black women in that role. And it spoke to what was really happening in the neighborhoods as far as like the sides, those understories where Jada Pinkett's raising a little brother. We saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Her struggling with knowing how to love somebody like the Blair Underwood character. Vivica Fox being put in the position of working at a bank, trying to do the right thing, 9 to 5. And as soon as something goes wrong and she knows these people in the hood who comes into the bank, she's automatically like cut off her job.
Mm-hmm.
And it spoke to the fact that, you know, there are those people in the hood that are trying to get out, but they're always connected because that's where you're from and you're not necessarily trying to hide it.
Right.
Queen Latifah, you know, it was the first time on screen that we saw and put out there that, yeah, there are lesbians in the hood.
Right.
You know, and not like secret. She was like for real long Cleo, you know. Right. Like?
And black lesbians, period.
Yeah, black lesbians, period.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had your girl TT, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one of those TTs in the neighborhood too, struggling, single mother,
right.
trying to do right and just, you know. So for me, Set It Off was it. Love Jones, of course,
yeah.
The love story. But I have to say that another love story came in Love and Basketball. That was one of the ones, you know, like that line, I'll play you for your heart. It was like, wow. And it was kind of empowering because you have the role of, I think it was the first time where we saw a black woman at home, you know, the part played by Alfred Woodard.
Mm-hmm.
So it made us realize that, yes, there are black women who stay home and take care of their children,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you had the story of the basketball wife.
Right.
Played by Debbie Morgan, you know, who had the husband who was a stereotypical guy who had his other woman going on, but the love story inside itself, and it told women we can go after the man we want. You know, I think that was the best part when Alfre Woodard told her daughter, like, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Ray, how could we not think Ray?
Yeah.
You know, Jamie Foxx got the Oscar for that. So, and we saw him in a different light.
Absolutely.
Completely different light. I mean, I'm sure he would agree it was one of the most influential because it put him in Hollywood for real.
That changed his career.
Completely, mm-hmm. completely. And then I believe it was Love and Hip Hop. Was that the name of the movie? I might be talking
about
with Sanaa Lathan and Taye Diggs.
Yeah.
And she's like, I remember when I fell in love with hip hop. We were like,
That movie was really awesome because it spoke to how that music affected our entire generation.
Yeah.
And I love how they played on, you know, the two of them starting off as children being influenced, you know, in New York where, you know, it originated and how it just kind of had, how can I say, it just kind of was like the foundation for their entire lives, both of their careers, you know, were somehow wrapped into music. And then it was the thing that always kept them together as friends and eventually what made them lovers. It was a good movie. Yeah,
and it showed hip-hop in a different aspect because some people mistake hip-hop as only being like hardcore gangster rap, bling, bling, blingage.
Right.
You saw hip-hop in a respectable, intellectual way. Like you said, it took them to their careers.
Right.
Where people, not in front of the mic necessarily rapping, but for real solid careers.
Right.
And then just my honorable mention, The Wood.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody could relate to at least one scene in that movie. Like, oh, that's LaTierra, you know?
What's up, y'all? This is Malk Dees, and you are listening to the Black Is Break.
Yeah, this is John Lewitt. I think that my tentative list for the last, for the five most influential black movies of the last 20 years when I came in here was I think something along the lines of The Color Purple, Five Heartbeats, Soldier Story, Glory, and that movie with Morgan Freeman as the high school principal. What was that called?
Joe Clark.
Lean on me. Yeah. You find out all the movies is more than 20 years old. I was like, yeah. Really? What happened in the 90s?
Wow. And, I forgot about Lean on Me.
That was a great movie, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, after that, well, Malcolm X jumps to the top of the list because I think that, I mean, obviously Malcolm X was a significant historical figure, but for those who, and his autobiography is still widely read, even among people who don't necessarily read much else. I still run into people who, you know, haven't read a lot of the great works, but have read at least some of the autobiography of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And in Malcolm, there's this fiery sense of black manhood and empowering black self-identity that I think really reverberated from that film in a powerful mm-hmm. way. And it shapes the way we look at Malcolm and mm-hmm. the way we look at ourselves, I think, to this day.
And was it like, I feel like it was the first film about a black historical figure as controversial mm-hmm. as he was.
That's probably right. True.
You know what I mean? Because we haven't even had Martin's story on the big screen.
Isn't that interesting?
And it really humanized him, mm-hmm. I think, for those of us who only know him as the historical figure because he died so much earlier than we were born.
Right.
And so you really got to know the man and see that transition into
evolution.
The leader.
Yeah, right. The animation of him.
Right. Now, since then, what's the author's name? Manny Marable, the man he's written a new... I may have gotten his name wrong, but he's written a new biography of Malcolm X.
I know you're talking about. Right, I heard about that.
I think sort of reconstructs the Malcolm X story a little bit. There is
in a good way or just alternate.
I heard him interviewed and he'd say that it was definitely positive.
Okay.
However, there are some things that not everybody might think were quite as positive. And you don't necessarily need to get into the details about it. Some things that, you know, some people might not have wanted to learn about Malcolm X, but in a way it humanizes him more. I haven't read the book yet, but I intend to. Malcolm is worth learning about. Yeah. But Great Debaters is one that we haven't made.
Yes.
Wonderful movie. Denzel has a way of making you believe in yourself, doesn't he? Especially if he's a black man. Man, I want to be like that guy. That's why, you know, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but you're talking about the sort of prejudiced nature of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know how mad I was that they gave Denzel Washington an Oscar for Training Day? And let me explain, because Training Day was a good movie for what it was, and Denzel was phenomenal. It's just that, to me, you could have picked a Denzel Washington movie out of a hat and it would have been Oscar worthy.
Exactly.
Way before that.
Exactly.
So why is it that on the day they decide to sort of make up for all the times Denzel and other great black actors hadn't gotten their due, they give it to Denzel for being a crook and Holly for being a hoe? I just I didn't feel good about that at all.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I was not happy with Monsters
Ball.
Not
even Precious.
This is Delicia.
Hello, by the way, I'm Delicia. also Precious as well. Had very mixed feelings for that movie because even though, don't get me wrong, Monique played her part very well. She was an excellent actress. So I am not taking anything away from that. However, we're already fed quite a bit of negative images of black people in general, specifically seeing black women. To me, it just kind of promoted that that whole image of, you know, you have the single mother in, you know, poor urban areas, even though they brought up a lot of things, a lot of probably touchy subject matter that, especially in the community, people don't talk about, you know, incest and, you know, things, molestation, exactly, and abuse and things like that, verbal and physical abuse. Those things they did bring up that a lot of, you know, in the community don't really, you know, Black community don't discuss. However, my thought was, you know, to me, it was just kind of in the same line of once again seeing Black people win an award for playing a negative or, as you say, an antagonist, I guess, you know, the anti in a movie such as Training Day and Halle Berry, as he said, as you put it, playing a hoe. Seeing her, you know, once again being this villain, this image that, you know, a lot of, unfortunately, Black women are seen at today. Not to get off completely subject, even though this isn't film, but I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to, you know, hurt anyone's feelings who enjoys basketball wise, but I can't stand basketball wise. And not that it's in the same level, but it's,
but I get what you're saying.
Awful image of seeing this as the Black woman, you know, single Black woman.
Yeah. The last session that we had, we talked about the fact that what we're dealing with so often and what you just mentioned with Precious, I think what all of these images teach us is that that is the sort of view that Hollywood is comfortable with in regards to promoting the idea of what Black womanhood looks like, who we are as people, because that sort of imagery, it doesn't just stay within our nation. It travels all over the world. It's a global image.
It's a global image. Mm-hmm. It's not just the image of Black people. And that's the thing that I, that's the one thing that I just, you know, wish that, that they would just open their scope. There's, you know, just like every race. I mean, there's so many different faces. There's so many different experiences, social and cultural, you know, all things as far as us as a Black, you know, as a race. And so it'd be nice to kind of be able to, you know, to see us in that level, especially getting an award for, you know, playing a role that, not that there's nothing taken away, because it's a part, it's a role, it's, you know, opening the doors to certain subject matter, but at the same time, there's so many other things, so many other images and things that they could be putting out there and promoting. And like you said, Hollywood is comfortable that, well, it's time to get out of the comfort zone.
The problem is we end up not having any sort of control when it comes to that. And so what we're dealing with now, and we're definitely off topic, but we'll come back around. No, that's okay. Because it happens here. Everybody will tell you the conversations go that way. You know, we talk a lot about Tyler, and I feel like we try our darndest to critique and not bash when it comes to him. But now we're dealing with the stereotype of the single Black woman who is just dying to get a man and has to go through all of these trials and tribulations. She's highly successful. She's Christian. She's dating a dark-skinned man who's abusive. She's rescued by a light-skinned man who's blue-collar. That has been the formulaic storyline for several of his films. You know, and so we need to kind of break out of that. There's so many other stories that need to be told. And I think that's one of the reasons why we put this topic on the table, to say, you know, here's some of the films that we feel touched us in a way that are not dealing with all those stereotypes. Like, I wanted to go back for a second to Love Jones, because we did, you know, mention it, but not get into detail. I think what's so lovely about that film is they're regular people.
Yes.
There's nothing because that is something else that I think in terms of Black storylines that can be a little tiring for me. Every time there's a film about us, everybody's extremely successful. Everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody's 28, making six figures, CEOs and presidents of everything. I mean, every single film, from The Best Man, Think Like a Man. I mean, I'm naming the same ones, but I mean, all of the films, it's the same storyline. Right. Everybody's rich and successful. Mm-hmm. In this film, you have actual regular Black people who work or are trying to work regular jobs. One's trying to be a writer, one's trying to be a photographer. People are actually struggling, but not struggling in a way where it's impoverished, because that's the other side that we always get. Yes. Either we're extremely rich or extremely poor.
Right.
And so that story actually showed two people in the middle class trying to make a relationship happen. You know what I mean? And I think that's what made it not only lovely, but
It was real.
Real and easy to identify with. Like, I totally wanted to believe when I, after I saw that film, and they screened it when I was at UCLA, I really wanted to believe that Lorenz Tate and Nia Long were a couple. I'm like, God, they're so, this is great. You know what I mean? Like, that's black love right there. Yes. That's what it looks like. And so if we could get storylines that just touched on realistic subject matter. Every single one of us is not filthy, stinking rich. Every single one of us is not deep in poverty. There is a middle class, you know? And so if we could get more of even just stories coming from that perspective, that would be great. With Denzel and Malcolm, like, there was just, to me, like John said, you could pull any Denzel role out of a hat and it'd be Oscar worthy, but the amount of work you have to imagine he put in terms of studying Malcolm to become to the point, because at some point you forget you're watching Denzel Washington. You really do forget it. You feel like you're watching Malcolm X and his life.
Yeah, you find, you find out earlier that he actually did him a theater version where he played Malcolm.
Right. But that's the brilliance of Denzel. I mean, he becomes the person. So even with Training Day, even though that wasn't one of my most favorite, but again, you can't deny he was so believable that I couldn't stand him.
Yeah, see, my introduction to Denzel was him playing a villain. Like John mentioned, A Soldier Story. Anybody who's seen A Soldier Story,
beautiful.
You know, Denzel was the ultimate villain in that film. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? There's something about him that's questionable from the moment he steps on the screen. And when you realize he's the one who's just the dirtiest character ever, you're just like, my God. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't stand him, but you're in awe of this man as well. Yeah. You know, so Training Day for me wasn't even something that was outside of his reach. He can play a villain.
Yeah, he was playing the positive brother for so long. I mean, Soldier Story is probably one. We can argue one of the top five best black movies ever.
Which one?
Soldier Story.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I liked his role. I wasn't mad at his role just because I was conflicted throughout the movie where, okay, you know, he's doing the right thing. All right, he's trying to be, he's trying to, you know, go along, having to cheat a little bit to actually, you know, stop all the crime. And then you like, this fool dirty. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like, well, is he good? Is he trying and is just caught up, you know, or is he really an ass? Like, I don't know what to believe.
For him in your head is
right. Because you want to be on his side so bad.
Until you realize, nah, ain't no being on his side.
Right.
I actually had mixed feelings about Precious because I almost put that down on my list because I looked at it from the perspective of that little girl who is struggling and then her life is touched by a teacher or someone who says, you can come out of this. Mm-hmm. You can grow out of this. And it didn't give any false hopes because she didn't become like the greatest after that. You know, so for me, it was like, okay, it touched on some touchy situations that it's happening in the community that we don't necessarily talk about that's happening in the community. So I had mixed feelings for that because I was like, okay, we're starting to tap into the taboo of our community that we don't necessarily talk about. Right. And then saying, but you can still move on.
Right.
You know what I mean? I love this. Was her Sapphire?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that she wrote it. I love who she is, you know.
Yeah.
I love that the cast wasn't this Hollywood glamorous, beautiful folks who you, what you saw was what you got.
Right.
They even told Little Miss Mariah.
No makeup, boo boo.
If you want to be a, if you want to be a part of this, yes, if you want to be a piece of this, this is what we're going to need from you. And she did indeed, you know, take that there. And I could appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I really did. Like, I, you know, yeah, we know, like, oh, did she really just say that, you know?
Right. What was hardcore for me, I think, to swallow about Precious is that that is one thing that I guess, well, I guess it depends on the film. There was no joy coming out of that story, no matter what. Like, even when you thought things were going to feel a little bit positive for this girl, then bam, it was going to be one more hit she was going to have to take.
Right.
And I was like, my Lord, like, this is more depressing than listening to a Sade album. You know what I'm saying? So that was the thing that was just like, it was gut-wrenching in
Hurts
that
like
way.
New shoes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it was definitely a story, I agree with both of you, something that we need to talk about. You know what I'm saying? Because that's something that our community is so good for. You don't air your dirty laundry as if these things don't happen to everybody. everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, Precious is kind of like Passion of the Christ or something. It's a wonderful movie that I never want to watch again.
Right. Yeah. See it once, you're good to go.
But I would differentiate between Precious and films like Training Day and certainly Monsters Ball in this.
Yeah.
Monsters Ball and Training Day were both very gratuitous in their use of sexuality and violence.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't, I mean, not to say that there weren't real issues at play in the movie, but both films were sort of over the top. And I'm not necessarily saying that we shouldn't watch them because of that. But to me, they don't, that lessens the degree to which they're really meaningful to me, more entertaining than me. Well, Monsters Ball, I just didn't like Monsters Ball. Training Day was, Training Day was entertaining. But Precious, though, really did, I think, hit on some real things. I can understand why it's sort of depressing, because it is depressing.
Right.
But on the whole, I'm glad that they made that film. Really. Yeah. And I don't feel so bad about that having won an Oscar.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But I think that we should define, I mean, just what does it mean for a film to be influential? I mean, they're good movies. They're great movies, you know. I think that when a film is really influential, it sort of changes the way you look at things a little bit.
Yeah, that would be
you go back in time. Think of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Now, that's an example of a very influential film, you know.
Right.
Because you're talking about mixed race and just
taboo.
Yeah.
And relations. Confronting people's attitudes about it in a very direct way. I don't know if you guys saw a movie that was sort of similar in a way, black movie.
Something new.
Yeah.
I saw that.
I love that movie. I thought that was a wonderful movie. But I think in a way that was serious, that wasn't just sort of, you know, half-hearted. It really went to the heart of the interracial relationship thing from a black woman's perspective. And I think it was really very honest about some of the reservations black women have about dating outside of their race. I mean, you've seen that explored in sort of more comic ways and with black men dating white women and whatnot, you know. But this took a real look at the interracial relationships from a black woman's perspective. And I thought it was tasteful and funny, but, you know, ultimately right to the point.
I think for me, when I think of influential, it's those movies that people walk away from and there's a line. And you can say a line and people know it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
King Kong ain't got nothing on me. You know what I'm saying? It just pops up, you know?
Right.
And there are only certain movies, you know, that have those key lines, those phrases that, you know, the average person wouldn't know what you're talking about. And to take that line away, it wasn't because the line was funny or anything like that. It may have been, but I think it means something. And for me, that would be to define influential. And so I went back and looked at my list like, you know, I'm going to make it do what it do. You know what I mean? Speechless, everybody knows it, you know? So for me, I'm like, okay, let me look at my list. Are there lines that stick out?
From every film.
From every film.
Yeah. I think I would define influential, too, as a film that has an impact on how Hollywood decides to create films. Because either based off of the support by the community and the amount of money that it made, they saw that as being a vehicle they needed to continue to monopolize and capitalize off of, actually. So that's one reason, too, why I think Boomerang stands out. Boomerang would have been that first film that showed all these successful black people. Everybody's young, everybody's rich, everybody's beautiful. And then here's this story. And from then, we've had nothing but that same type of story.
It's racial.
But that movie was chock full of excellent actors. It was so much just good casting in that film. The comedy points were right on.
The pool table analogy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was
Eartha Kitt as Lady Eloise, Grace Jones as Strawn J.
Juice.
Right.
Keeps the skin tight. Strawn J.
Grace Jones was unbelievable in that film. You know, I mean, everything about that film was so great. I mean, I don't know any guy that didn't want to be Marcus Graham. I don't know any girl that wasn't thinking, God, I want to be like Jacqueline. But no, I want to be like, I can't even think what Holly's character's name was. Angela. You know, but you wanted that life. They seemed like everything was just great.
And you knew people liked them. You know, we all had the Martin, the sidekick that was just like,
right. Pump your brakes.
Yeah.
See, if we would have been white, it would have been asparagus tits. Racial. Racial.
You know, and David Alan Grier's character, who you feel for in his awkwardness.
But you know him.
You do.
You know him.
And then, of course, the infamous Thanksgiving dinner scene.
Yeah.
Courtney. Like,
that's, you know, Courtney.
Right. And the parents, David, what's his name?
Is it David Witherspoon.
Yeah. It is David Witherspoon. And I never know that woman's name who plays his wife in every movie.
That's John Witherspoon. Come on.
Yeah, John. David.
John wrong, Witherspoon. Yes.
Wrong biblical name.
She can't think of the name, but she's been in everything.
And she always plays his wife a lot of the time. She was his wife in House Party. She was his wife in this.
Wait, wasn't this movie? He was like, don't be pussy whip.
Right. Bang, 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 bang. Ooh, daddy, please. I know that whole scene.
Yes. That was in the movies. The one,
and not to mention the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing soundtrack. You know, I think we grew up in an era, too, where that was kind of like a must-have. And we talked about the 80s movies that really had influences on us. All of them had slamming soundtracks. Yeah. Like the House Party trilogy. Oh, my God. Like, you were buying the soundtrack and then waiting for the movie to come out. You'd get that, too. Have both of them.
Tisha Campbell, leap your black ass off the ledge, then.
Okay. I know. That was a different Tisha Campbell for us.
It was. Mm. It was.
So, yeah. Yeah, I think influential can have several definitions. And now, a word from our sponsor. Attention, men in business. The ultimate business card gets you more TNA. Whoa, fellas, it's not what you're thinking. TNA stands for the traffic and action your website or video will attract when you have the ultimate business card from the ultimate business card guru. Appropriate for any industry, the custom-designed, high-gloss, double-sided business card will direct traffic to your site and motivate action by its recipients. For a limited time, order 1,000 of our custom-designed, full-color, high-gloss, double-sided, ultimate business cards for only $69. Call 1-888-239-0913 to order. Call now and receive a free guide, 10 tips to turning your business card into real money. Mention Black Is and get a customized QR code that leads smartphone users to the website or video featuring your business, product, or service. This dynamic feature is yours absolutely free. Call 1-888-239-0913 today. And remember, the ultimate business card gets you more TNA.
I was looking at, I just happened to be glancing online, looking for something that could be considered that were in this last 20 years. Hmm. I tried to split them up, kind of, so I'm gonna just name the list off. These are really actually could be influential, and these would be more the, I guess, the hood type movies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh. That we haven't mentioned at all. It's Friday, Menace to Society, mm-hmm. South Central, Juice, Belly, and actually Above the Rim.
Yeah. Right. Above the Rim, hands down, had the best soundtrack.
Yes, it did.
Ever.
Yes, it did. Wu-Tang.
Yeah, the soundtrack might have been better than the film. It was amazing.
I think Juice, yeah.
Yeah, and Friday.
I think Above the Rim actually really... impressed my brother, because my brother is, you know, a huge, huge basketball and to see Above the Rim. And of course, at the time, you know, Tupac was his idol. So that movie just encompassed everything, the music, you know, just the love of the game. And
it was a good movie to struggle a guy trying to get out.
Yeah.
And just
Boys
like
in the Hood was in the 80s.
88.
Yeah.
Frankly, I always thought Friday was a little overrated. Not that I didn't like Friday, but no, come on, if you take Chris Tucker out of Friday, is it really even all that good?
But you can name
Look at the rest of the series.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. The rest of the series is like, meh.
But that's what did it. Like Chris Tucker
was God. It's like Chris Tucker was hilarious. Chris Tucker made that movie from beginning to end.
Yeah,
Chris Tucker,
which is why he didn't do a sequel. He didn't play that character again.
He didn't get paid for the first one, according to him. I saw him in San Diego doing a comedy tour. He said, thank y'all for coming out and help me pay the IRS. You know, he said, I ain't going to do another Friday until Ice Cube paid me some money.
Oh, wow.
He paid me, said he paid me in CDs and weed last time.
Wow.
Well, you took on the name Spooky.
Right.
I'm going to tell you another black movie that I really thought wasn't that good that ticked me off. Y'all ready for this one? You know which one got on my nerves?
Which one? Shit.
Princess and the Frog. I was so mad. I was so mad about it. Okay, did y'all like
it? Which means,
did
like, dang, like should movie? We put the Lion King up there as black film?
No, but
you can, and that would be high up there.
It would.
And that was one of the most emotional movies.
Lion King was a great movie, though. No, I wish you could consider. I mean, maybe if you consider Lion King the first black Disney movie, then that was a great movie. But you know, with the black princess, you know, not a lion, you know,
that wasn't like that was an actual person.
Yeah, exactly. Because Princess and the Frog was billed to black people. Talk about being promoted to black people. Yeah, they wanted black people to come out for that. And to me, it just seemed like they really just sort of threw it together just for that purpose. And she's a frog for three quarters of the film.
Let's just go there and talk about Disney and black people. Because they cannot...
Wait, the black person.
Right. They cannot tell a story that deals with black people, African people, anything ethnic in regards to that part. Because they've done other ethnicities. They've done Aladdin. They've done that. They've done Mulan. But when it comes to us... Damn it, if every single time animals at some point. We have to be personified as animals. They will never tell a story like Disney. Here's my challenge. I want you guys to take on like some for real African or just black folk tales. Do John the Conqueror. I want to see that. You know what I'm saying? But more than likely, they go get a Nazi the spider. Why? Because it's an animal. You know what I mean? Like, they just will not allow they won't put black people, they won't animate black people. We have to be personified.
Maybe they just can't come out and say that, you know what, we're not good at telling the black story, so we're just not going to try.
So you get somebody on staff. There are some black folks that can draw and can be animators. Like, come on.
They're not forced to. They're making too
They're not
money.
Trying to.
Nah. Yeah.
Pixar, where you at?
One where they had the zippity-doo-dah.
He was just lips.
Yeah.
That's
what
it
was
called,
with lips. What was that?
I don't remember that one.
Y'all might hate me for this, but I love the Black Crows from Dumbo.
I was thinking about it.
From Dumbo.
Because they remember?
Seen about everything when I see an elephant fly. With the wind.
Because I thought about that. That was good, but I did think as I got older and I was like, wow, these crows are very stereotypical with the slang and everything. But their song was amazing. And I was like, they're the Black Crows. I'm like, all right, fine.
The Black Crows.
You know, I was like, if you pick somebody else, I was like, if you pick some animal that's country, it better be some PWT sounding.
Yeah.
I think the reason why they make us into animals is because they feel like they can digest it better.
It's easier to swallow.
Exactly. It's much easier
to look better
swallow
as a lion.
Because, right. Exactly. Because, oh my goodness, perish the thought if you have an actual black animated character,
right?
You know, that the white people won't come.
Because they'll probably draw it really fucked up, too, if you think about it. Like, the whole look will be exaggerated. Because I remember in The Lion King, wasn't Whoopi Goldberg one of the hyenas?
Yes.
And I promise you, they took a picture of her while they were sketching that hyena. I said, now, this is foul. You guys are just as foul. And you know what this is making me think of, you guys? I really want to just quickly diverge into a topic about future movies. How many of you have heard about Quentin Tarantino and this new film that he's coming out about that's about slavery?
Yes, it's called...
I've not heard.
Wait a minute.
I forgot.
Quentin Tarantino. Hold on, girl. I'm about to Google it right now.
I just... I'm kind of like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, a friend of mine sent me the casting information because it was sent to him. He's on some listserv when, you know, certain scenes come or certain roles come up for black people. And they were saying, you know, people have to be, the part of it was like, whoever, if you're going to come out for this, please be comfortable with playing a slave because you will be playing a slave. I'm like, wow, this is interesting.
Real quick, do we consider Crash a black movie?
More mainstream. It's a multi-ethnic film, but it does touch on the black experience in an interesting way. I thought that was a good movie.
Thinking about Cheadle again, because he does so many good films to me. Did anybody see Talk to Me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
I
movie.
Thought that was right. So good and so slept on.
I wouldn't promote it that much, marketed that hard either.
Mm-mm. Oh, excuse me. Tarantino's film is Django Unchained. Okay. Unless the D is silent, then it's just Django Unchained. Either way it goes, I got a fucking problem with it. Sorry, Tarantino. Mind you, Quentin Tarantino is one of those weird... He's a weird figure in the sense that you cannot deny he's a bit of a genius. But something is so very frightening about that man. I would not want to be in the same room with him by myself. Right. He's scary. He's scary. If you told me prior to him becoming a filmmaker, he had a previous situation as a serial killer, rapist, something like that, I'd believe all of that. I'd believe absolutely all of it.
Sorry, Quentin.
I hope he does. He freaks me out. But he has balls bigger than this universe for some of the stuff that he does.
What was the name of it? Django?
The Django Unchained.
See, that name itself...
Makes you
want to
cringe
because
you're wondering where he's going to take this.
Right.
Because
you know
he'll, you know, that's
he'll take it as far as he wants to.
Yeah, I would need
he's
to
not
hear,
about
like,
being
the,
safe.
I would need to hear the full plot line. I was like, you can spoil it and everything. I want to hear exactly
how this is Django.
All I know about Django.
With Tarantino, it could either be good or terrible. That's
exactly.
Tarantino.
From what I heard about the story, it's supposed to be about a slave who runs away, he escapes, and then I think at some point goes back and kind of has like a rebellion on his master.
Django Unchained. Django.
The slave has got out of his chain.
Unchained.
I'm scared.
It's probably going to have like, you know, a nice 70s soundtrack.
Of course.
It's not the same.
I have a question. When I thought about
killing people to Africa, Bombada or something.
When I thought about him doing that movie, I had two thoughts that went in my head. Was one,
why
are we not honestly one, I was like, would we be more cool with it if a black person was directing, and two,
yes,
would we even want a black person doing the movie? Will we be comfortable with a black person doing the movie about slavery, period?
Nobody's done one since Roots.
There are probably some people who were not cool with Roots.
Well, our current generation is so far removed from our history that if you were trying to market to the 20-somethings, sorry, not you, John, but the 20-somethings and the college kids about, here's this black film about slavery, I don't think any of them would support it.
Well, I mean, if you're marketing to them, then probably not. But if you're making a black film about slavery, because I mean, we complain about it not being known. It's like, hey, let's do a movie about slavery and show it like a real movie. But I mean, we're doing it that
we've had a black film where a white director, i.e. the color purple,
right.
We so love Mr. Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, we gave him a pass. Yeah,
he gets a pass for adopting black kids. That's why he gets a lot.
Yeah, you know, and Alice Walker, you know, was her. I just have a problem with Django Unchained. Like, I think that's his little secret way of the Negro Unchained.
Right.
You know,
that's what he wants to say.
Negro Unchained.
Like, I'm your master.
But in defense of Tarantino, I don't think that's closet racism. I think he just probably really thinks that just cool as heck. You know,
man, he's such a weirdo. But he's brilliant too, because that last film he did about Nazis,
Inglourious Bastards, yeah, like,
brilliant.
That's my second favorite Tarantino movie after Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is one of those
brilliant
movies like Scarface that it's not a black movie, but it's so, you know, so influential to so many black people.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that it's much more influential than a lot of black movies.
Yeah, yeah. Pulp Fiction was awesome. The whole Kill Bill trilogy was great.
I didn't really care for Kill Bill too much.
Loved it.
I know, right?
It.
To me, it was just a little. Well, the first one was okay. I really couldn't hang with the second. I couldn't even. It seemed a little oversaturated to me. I like with Pulp Fiction, you had some breathing space between, you know, and some build up between the different scenes. Kill Bill, it was just like one big climax from beginning to end. I was just like worn out just watching. Just like,
really? Yeah, and Glorious Bastards was one of those films. Once you get caught up in it, just as long as you sit and watch it and you're not disturbed. Right. Brilliant story. Like, just brilliant story from beginning to end. Everything about that movie was excellent. And the man that won the Oscar that year, that was well-deserved. But let's get off of Tarantino, back to black films. Right. Question. Since Chris did talk about, you know, the idea of black folks make movies about slavery, and we've touched on wanting to see other images, what films would we suggest to Hollywood should be made? What stories would we want to see? Because right now, Hollywood is having a remake, like, renaissance. Any film that was already successful in the 60s is getting a chance to live again, you know, in this current day. I mean, they're remaking everything from cartoons, The Smurfs in New York. Are you serious? Like, they're doing everything over. So what stories would we want to see?
Yeah, that and comic book movies.
Oh, my God. They're Marvel crazy right now. Oh,
yes, let's stop it. Enough already.
Yeah. I want to see one that's I want to see a real story about black church. I want to see a real, where the church is a, the church itself is a central character. I don't want it to be like the whole Madea story where we go into church at the end and say, I don't want that. I want the church to be the main meat of the story.
To be real with you, I don't think Hollywood is interested in making a movie that really focuses on anybody's church.
We did. Yeah. What movie was that? Yeah, that's
like, I mean, unless I'm overlooking something.
Yeah. Well, not the black church, at least.
Yeah.
No, not the white church either. I mean,
many movies have touched on Catholicism in different ways.
Well, revolving around
Doubt. When they did Doubt was centered in about church and the whole issue with the Catholic Church and the priests and the boys.
I don't think that's okay. But again, that was for, and I didn't see Doubt, but that was focusing on the controversy within the church about the obviously the sexual abuse going on behalf of the priest. But in terms of a film that shows the church in you know, critical but also a positive light, I think, you know.
I didn't necessarily say positive.
Okay, but right. That's what Hollywood's not really interested in.
We had the Fighting Temptations, wasn't that it, with Beyonce?
About the choir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, what was that? I think Women Thou Art Loose. Is that the name of it, by T.D. Jakes?
Yeah, yeah.
With Elise.
He's in it.
He's in it.
And Elise.
Yeah.
Is it Elise Neal? What's her name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with John. The problem with that is if you're doing it about church as a central figure, you're going to bring up questioning religion as a whole.
That's what America does.
Yeah, and you're basically going to bring the whole up is do we need it, or the whole church and state? Well, it's, you're just bringing up the question of religion and, like, religion versus, you know, is it real or what came first?
God, I put that challenge, like, out there to Spike. Yeah. Try it. See what happens. Yeah.
He already
controversy's good for everybody.
We can try. They're gonna be like, nope.
It's a talking point. Yeah. But what are some films you guys would want to see made?
Oh, not to get off the subject, but it's interesting you talked about churches, that there's a documentary. I don't know if you can find it, but it's not out. But they did a very controversial documentary where the director, he had interviewed and went to various, you know, churches. Black churches.
Okay.
And we're trying to uncover some of the, I guess, certain the negative things that happen within the church, like, you know, certain ministers that use their power, I guess, they use their authority in a negative way, as far as, you know, adultery, sexual abuse, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of money laundering, things like that. And these
which
were,
doesn't just happen in black churches.
No, it's all right. around, but that was what he focused on. And mm-hmm. these were supposedly, you know, really big names. But it's one of those films that I don't think is ever going to really be out in the open for everyone to see. But from what I gather, from what I heard, it was quite well done, but it was extremely controversial.
Did you guys see Jesus Camp? That documentary that came on HBO.
Oh, yes, I did. That was something.
That was controversial. Was Yeah, that was the whole, it was a summer camp, basically. But it was like the total, like, extreme conservative Christian population. And some of the stuff that they were showing was frightening. Wow. It was just straight up frightening, the way that they were kind of brainwashing these children. Because it was one thing to introduce, like, indoctrinate them. But the way that they were going about it was making these kids, like, how could I say it? Like religious rebels, so to speak. Like the sort of folks that will go into the world and condemn other people, like be dogmatic and in their face, crazy type. You know, the sort of folks that'll scare you. No, you know what I mean?
They were basically trying to raise them like how they feel like you have...
like a military.
Like a little cult.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Muslims who basically feel like they commit suicide for the people. They want to raise Christians like that. Wow. Who are like, I'm willing to die over my religion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think I'd like to see stories of, like, music icons, so I'm kind of excited about the whole hype about Andre doing the Jimi Hendrix story.
Yeah, that one's been in the works for a while. Yeah.
So I love those kind of stories where they follow the musical icons.
Yeah, you know, and that's and do excellent casting.
Yeah. I wonder how far they're going to go with him, because what people don't know is that Jimi Hendrix was quite political. He was actually very influential in a lot of things, and I don't know how far they're going to delve in it, if they're just going to just go on this, just stay within the surface of him being a musician and you know,
keep it kind of Hollywood.
Are they actually going to really kind of dig deep into really
who's
who
making
was?
It? Who's doing it?
Yeah, who's directing
I'll
it?
I look it up.
Could you think with somebody, when Andre I'm trying to do it, he'd want to delve into the
political side of it? Yeah,
he does, because there's a lot of things about Jimmy that people don't know besides his musicianship, which would be quite interesting. Mm.
I liked Idlewild.
I wanted to like Idlewild. I really did. I really did.
Yeah. Inkwell.
Yeah. But that's because I love Lorenz Tate.
Yeah.
Because I also love Lorenz Tate as O-Dog in Menace to Society. He's good.
Menace was an eye-opener, too, for people who, if Boys in the Hood didn't really get you enough.
Here's Menace to Society.
Yeah, right. If you like the X-rated version. Right.
Let's go deeper into South Central L.A.
And what was so crazy is that with Lorenz, if you're looking at Menace and then you follow that up with the Inkwell, you basically have the same boy with the same hairstyle. You couldn't have more of a different character, though. You know, like in Menace, you thought, even though he was young, you still thought of him as a man.
Yeah.
In the Inkwell, you couldn't have told me that Lorenz was more than 13 years old, you know, with the way he was able to play that. He's brilliant.
Yeah. And which makes me think of the Frankie Lyman story.
Which
is a good movie.
Very good.
Which in turn makes me think of, what movie do I want to see made? I wanted to see Eddie Griffin do Sammy Davis Jr. I've been wanting to see that for a long time.
Yeah.
Wait, right? Who do it? Eddie Griffin.
Eddie Griffin would be a perfect Sammy Davis Jr., I think.
He had him down.
To be honest, that's like the one role Don Cheadle played that kind of disappointed me. I didn't think he made that great a Sammy Davis.
Oh, because they made that Rat Pack film?
Yeah, they made the Rat. I didn't think any of it. Well, the guy who played Dean Martin was kind of good as an ugly Dean Martin, but he caught his mannerisms well. But Ray Liotta and Don Cheadle as Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., I just wasn't buying it.
Yeah, those are the stories
I'd now, I would, as far as historical figures, I would love to see a compelling film about Harriet Tubman or Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see one about Martin Luther King Jr., too. The problem with that, and there, by the way, there have been some really good movies made about King that just haven't, you know, been big screen movies. What's that guy's name? God, he's a brilliant actor. And aside from the Martin Luther King Jr. movie, I can only think of character parts. He was the bad guy in Shaft. Not the white guy, obviously.
He died.
He died.
I know who you're talking about.
Are you serious? I did not know that.
You were waiting for him to be in the next
Wow. Can we edit that out? That's embarrassing.
I can't.
I'm just playing. But no, that's too bad. He was an incredible actor.
I would like to see Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman would be good now.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
For women.
What I was going to say about King is just that his legacy is, I mean, Harriet Tubman is too, of course, but King's legacy is so relevant and so sensitive to us now that the way
Paul
they did it, you know, Paul
he's
Winfield.
Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So watch. I can't remember the name of the movie, but and it may have been put into two volumes. But watch Paul Winfield play Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, that was very good.
For anybody in the audience who hasn't seen that, I mean, as good a job as Denzel Washington did playing Malcolm X, if anybody approached that with Martin Luther King Jr., it was Paul Winfield.
His version was good.
And you know what? Scrap the whole idea of doing the Black Church movie. I want to see the Harlem Renaissance.
That would be nice.
I would love to see some film that dramatized the Harlem Renaissance. Yes. Even if they looked at a few years, I want to see...
The story of Langston Hughes.
Langston Hughes, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, James Zora Neale Hurston. I want to see all of that happening. I want to see what Jordan that looked
Johnson.
Like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the time period I think I try to imagine a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get a visual of what did that feel like at that time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of literature that's written during that time period, of course, because that was...
Claude McKay.
Right, a flourish of art. But some of the stories talk so much about the living conditions in New York at that time, of the people who were not affluent, people who were not a part of the niggerati, so to speak. And those stories are very, very hard to read. It can be some difficult stuff. I'm right now thinking of Anne Petrie, The Street, which I think takes place a little later than the actual Renaissance.
That
would
be great.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, it's when you have me thinking about the remakes. I keep thinking all these Black movies that I hope they don't do that they're going to remake. Because I feel like they're going to remake House Party.
Cannot.
It's only been like 30, and they'll redo it.
I'm against that.
Hey,
or like New Jack City. You know they're gonna remake New Jack City.
Hey, wait a second.
That was influential.
They're gonna.
Yeah, I was thinking, hello, here's the Black Crack Game.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Oh, Wesley played that so good.
High Roller.
Yeah, and Chris.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I much prefer like American Gangster and New Jack City. New Jack City was.
Why can I? No,
Christopher Williams.
The comedian.
Alan Payne.
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock.
Yeah, playing the junkie.
You used to be the prom queen, now you're more like a prom thing.
No, I was going to say, you know what they're remaking is,
Sparkle?
No. With Bruce Leroy and Show Enough, you know?
Oh, The Last Dragon.
Yeah, we're talking about remaking.
But wait,
that.
Who was going to be cast?
From what I hear, they can't, well, I think Samuel Jackson is supposed to be Show Enough, and that makes perfect sense to be.
Yeah.
But I think they're having a tough time finding a Bruce Leroy.
Well, they might as well bring Ty Mock right on back, because he hasn't done anything.
Who he going to play? He going to play his master?
Yeah.
He could.
Or he going to play his daddy?
Michael Jai White would be a
good show.
Even though he's older. But
he'd be too funny, though. He would. I thought about him.
He would be funny. Have you ever seen Black Dynamite?
Yes. It's hilarious.
I mean, it is what it is. But Black Dynamite, you have to admit, it was quite brilliant. So, I mean, that was the first time that I saw him. Why Did I Get Married? But seeing him just as the main character and being funny, I think he could pull it off.
Black Dynamite was awesome.
He is. He's a master. A martial artist, so I think he would be perfect. I don't know.
He's just not young enough.
He's not young enough, but they could.
I guess you want what y'all had with Tyma back in the day.
You got
to have a young guy play that role, though, because that was part of the appeal
Chris
of
Brown
Bruce Lee.
To do it.
Yeah, they were talking about Chris Brown.
Yeah, if they have to have somebody,
you said they were talking about Christmas Eve.
Yeah, they were talking about. But
if they have to have a household,
he know how to hit people.
True.
I'm getting in there first.
he just beat me to it. I was trying to think of a way to sneak it in there.
Who would play Vanity's character?
Whoever.
Wow.
No, I mean, seriously. Yeah. Some singer?
Yeah.
Rihanna, probably? I mean, shit.
No, they're not going to give it to her.
Because Vanity is really not about the singing. It's the sex appeal.
Yeah, they'll just pick somebody who's whoever.
It'd be hard to find someone like that.
Cassie.
Yeah.
Cassie,
she young enough.
People gonna want to be that character.
Yeah,
but Samuel Jackson showing up that would be awesome.
Show Enough died recently. To
Did
the
he?
Real Show Enough.
Yeah, catch bullets with your teeth.
Oh, anybody have anything to say in summation?
No, I think this was fun.
All right,
let's recap our Black movie.
It was good. We just did it from clearly, if we go earlier, we just gonna get too deep and it's just so many good movies. I hope Hollywood keeps putting out, well, people in general who like making films, just keep trying, keep putting that work out there, and Right. But not the good stuff. We want it.
I just
want
to say, come back, Robert Townsend. We miss you. You were so great.
Yes.
You know, you're just so great. And please, you know, rescue us from some of these other folks if you feel like it.
Please do. And there's a sister out there named Ava DuVernay who is a part of a larger film alliance, AFFRM, the African American Film Festival Releasing Movement. And they are trying their darndest to tell a variety of Black stories. Chris and I saw one called I Will Follow that Sally Richardson was in, which is a very good story. It was a very good story. Tori and I saw another one called Restless City, and the story leaves much to be desired, but visually it was a beautiful film to look at. But overall, we were a bit restless, but I think that was one film. I'm hoping that was just one kink in the armor. I think they're going to, if the rest of the stories look something like Love Will Follow, then I think we'll be good. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and check back in with the next Black Is Break. And I want to say happy birthday, Malcolm X. Peace.